You're listening to What, So What? I am your host, Jerry Paquette, co-author of the book Eat to Save Your Life and director of education with the Shoe Swap Food Action Co-op, a local organization addressing the issues of food security. What, So What? Provides discussions about food, the people who grow and distribute it, and its links to our health and well-being. Today, I am alone in the studio, accompanied only with my intention to sum up the issue of GMO foods and bring to you some information I suspect most of you may not be aware of. Before I begin reading from some of the sources I have with me today, I think it's important you know something of my own background. I am not a laboratory research scientist by education or practice. I do have two research degrees that help me wade through the maze of research articles available to all of us, however, but until fairly recently, I restricted my interests and my analysis of things to learning theory and educational practice. I did that for some 46 years. And all that led me, forced me, in fact, to become interested in the role of nutrition in the lives of my students, whether they be elementary students, junior high, senior high, university students. And that in turn led me to study the impact of bad nutrition on everybody. And putting it more positively, led me to study the impact of good food on everybody's health. And that all led me to the issues presented by GMO science, something for most of my life I knew nothing about. So I want to share with you what I have learned. You can all learn it. You can do what I did in your own way, and you'll come up, I think, in the end, if you spend some time with similar results. I hope it leads you to do some reading, thinking, and sharing of your own about the foods you buy and eat and offer to your families. I have three sources of information today that I will draw on. Andrew Kimbrell, author of Fatal Harvest, and a land attorney who used to be a litigator for plaintiffs, is one of them. I heard him this weekend on a webinar on food called Food Revolution Summit by John Baskin, who was part of the ice cream shop, and his son, Ocean, who are doing a splendid job of attempting to draw in together the top people in food-related areas and have them speak for free to people for well over an hour or so. And this is where I heard from Andrew Kimbrell, and I'll share some of what he had to say this weekend. He, by the way, is in Hawaii, and he's an attorney there who is working against GMO foods. He now sees himself not just as a litigator for plaintiffs with problems against whoever, but as a defender of democracy. I think you'll see why. I'm also going to share with you the author of Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed, that is. Her book, Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed, is one of many that Vandana Shiva has written about GMO foods, tracing her experience with food and government and globalization, particularly in India. But she is now truly an international figure, and I got to meet her in person in Calgary, Alberta, at Mount Royal University a few years ago. And since then, I read all of her books. And I think some of what you're going to hear from her today will prompt you to seek them out as well. And finally, in a very, very positive note, it will be, I'm going to read from you the mandate of a Mexican restaurant that many of you may have well eaten in. I think you'll find it very exciting. The bottom line for me is this. The issues of GMO are extremely complex. They are characterized by, I think, the greed of multinational corporations that are attempting to take over the sources of food for reasons that they give, but that cannot really be supported by science and by, in some cases, well, many cases, simple common sense, as I'll try and show. Now, I'm going to be rambling a bit because that's the nature of the beast here. There is so much information, not all of it very good, not all of it very well documented, some of it from sources that are very hard to track down, much of it from sources who are paid sources by large corporations and other sources by struggling scientists who are not supported by anybody much at all. And I'm going to draw on all of them to show you that the issues about GMO foods is indeed complex, but it's one that you have to make up your own mind about. Now, I take a particular stand. I acknowledge that, so here's my caveat. I do not believe we need GMO foods after many hundreds and hundreds of hours that I've spent talking about it, reading about it, listening about it. I do not support it for the reasons I'll offer you today. You don't have to agree with me. I hope we get a dialogue going from it. I hardly know where to begin because of the complexity of the issues and the importance of it. So I'm going to begin, I think, as I'm looking across my desktop right now here in the studio, I'm going to begin with Vandana Shiva. I was going to end with her, but I may do that as well. She is so knowledgeable, so dedicated to the issues of feeding people. I think you're going to find her very interesting. I'm reading from her book, Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed, and only the chapter, the introduction, and she calls it Terra Madre, a celebration of living economies. So I hope you like being read to, because that's what I'm going to be doing today. Here she goes. In a world dominated by fear and fragmentation, dispensability and despair, a magical gathering of food communities, Terra Madre, Mother Earth, took place in Turin, Italy, in October 2004. Slow Food, the movement that has put the culture of growing and eating good, healthy, diverse food at the heart of a social, political, and economic transformation, brought together 5,000 members from 1,200 food communities in 130 countries. I'm going to read those numbers again because a lot of people who are frightened of the GMO issue or confused by it or are angered by it often feel alone. What can they do? So she brought together, or Slow Food rather did, 5,000 people from 1,200 food communities in 130 countries. That's a lot of people and a lot of cultures and a lot of organizations represented. Despite the diversity and differences, everyone was connected. Connected through the earth, our mother, Terra Madre. Connected through food, the very web of life. Connected through our common humanity, which makes a peasant the equal of a prince. Terra Madre was a gathering of small producers who refused to disappear in a world where globalization has written off diversity of species and cultures, small producers, local economies, and indigenous knowledge. Not only are small farmers and local food communities refusing to go away, they are determined to shape a future beyond globalization. As Giovanni Alemano, the Italian Minister of Agriculture and Forestry, said in his introductory speech at Terra Madre, quote, "What is original and truly revolution about Terra Madre is that by selecting the food communities least susceptible to industrial process, hence distinctive for the authenticity and quality of their produce, it attempts to place small-scale food producers at center stage." Over the past few decades, food production, processing, and distribution has shifted out of the hands of women, small farmers, and small producers, and is being monopolized by global corporate giants such as Cargill, Monsanto, Philip Morris, and Nestle. Small producers everywhere are being displaced and uprooted by the unfair competition from heavily subsidized agribusiness. The anti-globalization movement has focused on the unfairness of global trade rules that are pushing farmers into debt and suicide. At Terra Madre, small producers gathered not just to curse the darkness of corporate globalization, but also to light and keep lit the lamps of small, centralized, biodiverse production. The vibrant energy of Terra Madre came from the resilience of producers who had continued to save and share their diverse seeds, live their diverse cultures, speak their diverse languages, and celebrate their diverse food traditions. There was a community of dried mango producers, and a name here I can't recognize at all, a group of women who harvest, process, and sell edible insects. Makers of Liguria, nomadic shepherds from India and Kirgbiti, sheep breeders from Central Asia, jasmine rice producers from Thailand, and basmati rice producers from India. These last two have been biopiracy victims of Rice Tech, one of the big corporations. Sorry, I just had to close the door. There's a whole bunch of activity going on here today, which is good to see down here at the downtown activity center, which is really a very diverse place after all. But let me get back to my issue. The world of Terra Madre reflected the real world of people, with diversity so dazzling that the eyes and ears were having a feast, while communities communicated with pride, joy, and dignity about their agricultural and food traditions. This was not the world of World Trade Organizations, like the WTO, where only agribusiness exists, where agricultural trade basically means soya, corn, rice, wheat, and canola, where one company, Monsanto, accounts for 94% of the world's genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, and where most food is grown, or that is grown, is not eaten by humans, but by billions of captive animals in factory farms. In Terra Madre's world, small farms produce more than industrial farms, while using fewer resources. Biodiversity protects the health of the soil and the health of people, and quality, taste, and nutrition are the criteria for production and processing, not toxic quantity and super profits for agribusiness. Diversity provides the ground for us to turn our food systems around. Diversity of crops, diversity of foods, and diversity of cultures. Diversity provides both the resistance to monocultures and the creative alternative. Our strength is our uniqueness and variety, a strength that can be eroded only when we give up on it ourselves. I'm going to continue reading for another two pages of her book just to establish the basis for some of the material that's going to follow. Here she describes another paradigm for food, and I'm reading from Vandana Shiva's Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed. Terra Madre provided an opportunity and platform to articulate another paradigm for food. During the opening ceremony, Carlo Petrini, the founder of Slow Food, called upon everyone to defend the rights, knowledge, and creativity of small producers all over the world. He also called for us to abandon the gap between consumer and producer. Let us become co-producers, he said. To consume means to destroy. That's why consumption was the name given to tuberculosis. In the act of eating, we are already participating in production. By eating organic, we are saying no to toxins and supporting the organic farmer. By rejecting GMOs, we are voting for the rights of small farmers and people's right to information and health. By eating local, we are taking power and profits away from global agribusiness and strengthening our local food community. Eaters are, therefore, also co-producers, because their relationship with small producers is a critical link in creating a sustainable, just, healthy food system, and because we are what we eat. In making food choices, we make choices about who we are. The industrialization and globalization of our food systems is dividing us. North, south, producer, consumer, rich man, poor man, rich woman, poor woman, rich children, poor children. The most significant source of our separation and division is the myth of cheap food. The myth that industrial food systems produce more food and hence are necessary to end poverty. However, small, biodiverse organic farms have higher output than large industrial monocultures. As Prince Charles of Great Britain reminded the gathering during the closing ceremony, quote, "One of the arguments used by the agricultural industrialists is that it is only through intensification that we will be able to feed an expanded world population. But even without significant investment, and often in the face of official disapproval, improved organic practices have increased yields and outputs dramatically. A recent UN FAO study revealed that in Bolivia, potato yield went up from 4 to 15 tons per hectare. In Cuba, the vegetable yields of organic urban gardens almost doubled. In Ethiopia, which 20 years ago suffered appalling famine, sweet potato yields went up from 6 to 30 tons per hectare. In Kenya, maize yields increased from 2.25 to 9 tons per hectare, and in Pakistan, mango yields have gone up from 7.5 to 22 tons per hectare." Unquote, a quote from Prince Charles. During the inaugural ceremony, Vandana goes on to say, "I drew attention to the fact that globalized, industrialized food is not cheap. It is too costly for the earth, for the farmers, and for our health. The earth can no longer carry the burden of groundwater mining, pesticide pollution, disappearance of species, and destabilization of the climate. Farmers can no longer carry the burden of debt inevitable in industrial farming. That 150,000 farmers have committed suicide in India is a symptom of the deep crisis in the dominant model of farming and food production. This system is denying the right of food and health both to the 1 billion who are hungry and the 1 billion who suffer from obesity. It is incapable of producing safe, culturally appropriate, tasty, quality food. And it is incapable of producing enough food for all because it is wasteful of land, water, and energy. Corporate agriculture uses 10 times more energy than it produces, 10 times more water than ecological structure or agriculture. It is thus 10 times less efficient. Labor efficiency is also a myth. All the researchers, pesticide producers, genetic engineers, truck drivers, and soldiers engaged in wars over oil are part of the industrial food production system. If all the people involved in non-sustainable food production were counted, the labor efficiency of industrial food would also be lower than that of ecological food. When agriculture becomes like war, and weapons of mass destruction replace internal farm inputs, food becomes non-food. Trade based on false prices and unfair exchange is not trade, it is exploitation. Industrial food is cheap not because it is efficient, either in terms of resource or energy efficiency, but because it is supported by subsidies and it externalizes all costs, the wars, the diseases, the environmental destruction, the cultural decay, the social disintegration. Terra Madre was a celebration of an honest agriculture in which prices do not lie, which does not exploit the earth and the earth's caretakers. Terra Madre was a celebration of our practice of living economies in which we co-produce with the earthworm and the spider, with the mycorrhiza and the fungus. We are all connected in the web of life, and it is food that spins that web. As the ancient Taittiriya Upanishad tells us, from food all creatures are produced. Beings are born from food. When born, they live by food. On being deceased, they enter into food. In India, we are creating food democracy through freedom farms, freedom villages, and freedom zones, organic farms free of chemicals and toxins and zones free of corporate, that is GMOs, and patented seeds are creating a bottom-up democracy of food to counter the top-down food dictatorship. And that ends the introduction to her book. Other writers like Michael Pollan, Carlo Petrini, Jamie Lionette, Prince Charles, and Vandana Shiva, as you've just heard. The book, again, is Manifestos on the Future of Food and Seed. And you're listening to me read right now. I am Jerry Paquette, and I am the broadcaster for What So What. Well, thank you for listening with me to listening to me read Vandana Shiva. I love her voice, her writing voice, and her speaking voice. And if you're interested in hearing her live from the show that I told you about, the webinar show that I told you about earlier, Food Nutrition, or rather Food Revolution Summit, please let me know by writing to DJ at voiceoftheshoeswap.ca and put in your subject line Vandana Shiva video. And I will send you a link so that you can hear her. Right now, what I want to do is something rather surprising. I want to talk about an organization that has decided against GMO foods for all sorts of reasons. The organization is called the Chipotle Mexican Grill, and many of you have likely visited that grill many times. Chipotle's is an international fast food restaurant, and you wouldn't think that good news would be coming from such an organization, a fast food restaurant. You would think fried foods. You would think, cheap foods. You would think all sorts of things that nevertheless get us going there from time to time, but you wouldn't think that they'd be a source of good nutrition. Maybe you would, but I don't. And so I was very surprised to find out all this that I'm about to read to you from the Chipotle website. And you can find this on chipotle.com. So here we are, a restaurant that sells fast foods, talking about GMO, changing their intention of providing GMO foods either accidentally or without care. So here's what they've said, and here's what they're doing. While some studies, writes Chipotle.com on their site, while some studies have shown GMOs to be safe, most of this research was funded by companies that sell GMO seeds and did not evaluate long-term effects. More independent studies are needed. The manufacturers of GMO seeds claim that GMOs are widely considered to be safe, but we don't believe the scientific community has reached a consensus on the long-term implications of widespread GMO cultivation and consumption. Again, this is from the Chipotle restaurant. For example, in October 2013, a group of about 300 scientists from around the world signed a statement rejecting the claim that there is scientific consensus on the safety of GMOs for human consumption. These scientists would like to see more research conducted, and they'd like to see more of the research to be conducted by independent third parties, not the companies marketing GMO crops themselves. Until such studies are conducted, we believe it is prudent to take a cautious approach toward GMOs. So that's the introduction to the Chipotle website. I thought I was going to go there and read about tortillas and see menu items and so on, and I didn't. I saw what I just read and more. Listen to this one. This is part two on Chipotle.com. The heading, the cultivation of GMOs can damage the environment. Evidence suggests that GMOs engineered to produce pesticides or withstand powerful chemical herbicides damage beneficial insect populations and create herbicide-resistant superweeds. The companies that sell GMO seeds claim that certain genetically modified crops are better for the environment because they reduce the amount of pesticides and herbicides used in farming. But this has not been shown to be the case. One recent study by researchers at Washington State University estimated that between 1996 and 2011, pesticide and herbicide use increased by more than 400 million pounds as a result of GMO cultivation. This and other evidence suggests that GMO crops are fueling an escalating arms race with weeds and insects. 93% of corn grown in the U.S. in 2014 was genetically modified. I'll read that again. 93% of corn grown in the U.S. in 2014 was genetically modified. This includes 76% of corn that is both herbicide-resistant and pesticide-producing, with the remainder engineered for only one of those traits. 94% of the soy grown in the U.S. in 2014 was engineered for glyphosate resistance. And you know that is part of Roundup. The World Health Organization recently designated glyphosate as probably carcinogenic to humans. The use of glyphosate is extremely widespread. More than 9% of the landmass of the continental United States is planted with crops genetically modified for glyphosate resistance. Given the concerns surrounding these types of GMOs and the chemicals associated with them, we felt it was particularly important to seek out non-GMO ingredients when possible. All corn-based ingredients, Chipotle restaurant goes on, in Chipotle's food that formerly may have been genetically modified have been removed or replaced with non-GMO versions. Again, I'm reading from the text on a website of a fast food restaurant. All soy-derived ingredients that may have been genetically modified were replaced with alternatives such as rice bran oil and sunflower oil, non-GMO. The white sweet corn in Chipotle's roasted chili corn salsa has always been a non-GMO variety. The organic soybeans used to make the tofu for our sofritas are not genetically modified, like all certified organic ingredients. What about beverages and animal feed? They go on to say on Chipotle.com. I'm amazed by this. The meat and dairy products we buy come from animals that are not genetically modified. But it is important to note that most animal feed in the U.S. is genetically modified, which means that the meat and dairy served at Chipotle are likely to come from animals given at least some GMO feed. We are working hard on this challenge and have made substantial progress. For example, the 100% grass-fed beef served in many Chipotle restaurants was not fed GMO grain, or any grain, for that matter. So there's a caveat for us. Not all the Chipotle restaurants have managed to go 100% non-GMO. You might want to ask the manager, should you visit the restaurant near you. Many of the beverages sold in our restaurants contain genetically modified ingredients, including those containing corn syrup, which is almost always made from GMO corn. So this is Chipotle fessing up at the same time it announces its endeavor to go GMO-free. And here's the last bit from their website. Isn't Chipotle contributing to unnecessary hysteria about GMOs? Their answer. When Chipotle first started talking about GMOs, it was in the context of transparency. We were the first large restaurant company to disclose the fact that there were GMOs in our food and commit to switching to non-GMO alternatives. Now, we want people to understand more about GMOs, whether they are in our food or not. We believe people should be interested in the food they eat and where it comes from and make choices that make sense for them and their families. There are real concerns about the health and environmental impacts of GMO foods. People can debate this topic, but those who have looked into the issue know that it is extremely complex. We believe the implications of growing and eating GMOs must be studied more by independent scientists who do not have an incentive to produce particular results. What we do know is that some of the chemicals and toxins used in GMO cultivation have caused health and environmental issues, and that is at the very least a reason to be cautious. Caution and hysteria are not the same thing. Well, that's Chipotle, back to back with Vandana Shiva, who I imagine has had some effect on the owners and operators of the Chipotle restaurants. So good for her and good for them, but they are not done yet. And one of the ways of getting them to the finish line is perhaps by your simply saying to them when you go visit their restaurant or any restaurant you go to, what are these made of? Do you get your food sources from GMO-free sources or from GMO sources, or do you know? And then you can make a choice about whether you stay or not. And the more of us who are asking those questions, the more restaurants like Chipotle are going to start to have second thoughts and maybe take the kind of action that we see in Chipotle. So congratulations from me to the Chipotle International food chain. Let me put some of this in perspective and bring it home to you about concerning the food that you buy from the sources in the shoe swap area or wherever you go. As of 2015, there are only 8 crops with GMO versions currently available in North America. I'll say that again. There are only 8 crops with GMO versions currently available in North America. So why worry? Some of them are herbicide tolerant. That is, herbicides don't bother them, so you can spread all the herbicides you want. Some are pesticide producing. That is, you don't have to spread pesticides around because they're contained in the food that you eat already. Some are disease resistant because of genetic manipulation. And some have multiple combinations of resistance and tolerance, and they are these. Are you ready? Number 1 on the list is alfalfa. Number 2, canola. Number 3, corn. These are all GMO version foods. Not all corn is, but corn is one of the biggest crops that is GMO, as is cotton, papaya, soybeans, sugar beets, and this surprised me, zucchini and summer squash. And even more important, I suppose, is this. Most animal feed, which means that GMO proteins are in much of the animal food products you eat. Most animal feed is GMO. And so the meat you eat, if fed on GMO crops, means you are eating the GMO genes and the chemistry that made those genes. Well, maybe that doesn't feel so bad because you can check out the meat and there's only 8 crops that we have to worry about. So let's just not eat any of those crops and no animal food products and stay away from, all become vegetarians or vegans, yes? However, these food crops, especially corn and soy, are used in some 80% of all processed foods consumed in North America. And here is some of those foods. So 80% of soft drinks contain GMO, corn, or soy. Soft drinks, fast foods, cereal, breads, sandwich meats, packaged foods such as soups, mustards, ketchups, whatever, and almost all snack foods have some aspect of GMO foods in them, particularly those that have high fructose corn syrup in them because it almost all comes from GMO corn crops. So that should be a shocker to some of you. Soft drinks, fast foods, cereal, bread, sandwich meats, packaged foods, what can we do? It's very powerful. Well, let me go now back to where I started on all of this in the past few weeks, and that's back to the Food Revolution Summit. I want to give you some of the comments that Andrew Kimbrell made while being interviewed by the hosts of the Food Revolution Summit. Andrew Kimbrell is the author of Fatal Harvest. He is actually a land attorney who used to be a litigator for plaintiffs, as I said at the outset, but who sees himself now as a defender of democracy for a very interesting reason. He pioneered the legal strategy that led the Supreme Court ruling that DNA is not patentable because it is a product of nature. His work has resulted in over 1.4 million signatures calling for GMO labeling in the United States. Currently, 64 countries around the world require labeling of genetically modified foods. What does that mean? Well, it means that you have a choice. That when you go shopping at Save-On or Safeway or wherever you may shop, and you pick up a can of some processed food, you can turn the can over and read the label and determine whether or not it is made with any GMO food products. If it is made with GMO food products and you buy it and eat it, then you are supporting the GMO corporate movement. Well, unlike most other developed countries, such as 28 nations in the European Union, Japan, Australia, Brazil, Russia, and even China, unlike all of those, the United States and our own Canada have no laws requiring labeling of GMO foods. They are the only two industrialized nations in the world without such laws, in spite of public insistence for labeling. And don't assume that people are not making noises about food labeling. They are, and I would invite you to do the same thing. When you go and look at a food product this evening, when you go shopping, look at the labels. And if you find things like soy or corn or high corn fructose, or you buy some ice cream cones, or you buy some chocolate bars, you've got to know that there's GMO in them, but are they telling you that on the labels? If they are not, they are taking away from you the choice you need to make a decision about the quality of food that you give to yourself and to your families. So junk foods and chemical companies are teaming up to fight food labeling bills. And there are a lot of bills being faced by our government, being received by our government and other governments and in the United States, but they are not being paid attention to. It is increasingly important for us all to know what is in our food, especially in an era that can and does introduce new proteins in our foods, proteins that have never been in our foods in history. Now, this is an important concept. The DNA is manufactured in a GMO food, as I think most of you know, we've talked about it on this show before, by manipulating the DNA structure of seeds, usually with proteins. And these proteins, these genes, are actually the patented property of the chemical and junk food companies. They haven't got a patent on the DNA of the original seed, but they do have a patent on the re-engineering of the seed. Now, here's something that I find very interesting. I'm just going to read his name properly. Andrew Kimbrell points out to us that the issue about GMO and whether it is good for us or bad for us is not yet resolved by science. Some of you who are strictly against GMOs might want to argue with him because you've read some studies that make it very clear. But it's not clear over the entire array of studies done they are in conflict with one another. It's not clear. And the only real issue there is not yet whether we have GMO or not have GMO. It's whether or not we know we're eating food with GMO, because there remains terrible doubt about its safety for our lives or in our lives. So what he is fighting for is not against GMO. He's fighting against industries that refuse to put the labels on them, on their food products. And Canada is one of the slowest countries in the world to say, yes, our people should know what they're eating, particularly GMOs, because it is new on the face of the earth. Remember that GMO genes can be changed by introducing not just other plants' DNA. That's crossbreeding. That's been going on since the beginning of time. Wind does that by blowing pollen from around the world, where it lands on our fields and plants grow that weren't there before, and they cross-pollinate with the plants that are there. That's been happening forever and will continue to happen forever. What GMO is able to do, however, is to introduce, say, an animal species DNA components into a plant's DNA components, cross species. We've never had that done before, particularly by companies whose only goal is to make a lot of money off of crops that offer a lot of apparent promise for being resistant to pests and diseases. So we have artificial proteins in the food that we eat, and we don't know it. I think it was in 2004 when the Starlink Corn Company became the object of the world's largest food recall. I think it was in 2005. Their corn was actually shown to be cancerous. And so it was recalled, and they lost that battle. Since then, the battle has ensued, and while that particular product is not on, variations on the same sort of thing are all over the place in our foods and in our guts and in our brains and in our hearts. So what do we do? Well, we get informed, first of all, and we make our notes about canola and corn and cotton and alfalfa and papaya and soybean and sugar beet, zucchini and summer squash, and say, where do they come from? Are they coming from a farmer who grows organically or not? 7% of the world's crops, eight crops in total, but 7% of all crops are GMO. Doesn't sound like much, just 7%. But they, of course, are the source of food for us 94% of the time. That is because they get mixed to create processed foods. To compare that to organics, 6% of our crops in the world are organic. 8% are GMO, 6% are organic. The rest are simply not, at least officially, termed organic. Not certified organic. Where was I going? I'm hedging here because I've got so much on my plate here, so much, not on my plate, but on my desktop to read to you. I just don't know where to go. I'm going to get away from that particular aspect of the issue about GMO crops, the issue being whether or not there are food labels and whether or not there are bills being passed. You know now that your government, the Canadian government, and every province is not mandating labeling for these foods. So whatever you may think of GMOs, if you haven't done a lot of reading about it, and you've been doing a lot of eating of it, I think it behooves you to simply ask the question of your government about why they are being rather neutral about the whole issue, and ask your restaurant owners and your food chain managers whether or not they are using GMO products. By the way, one of the other products in America that has said goodbye to GMO, and this may surprise you, is Hershey's Kiss products. I think it's those little wrapped up chocolates that they make. They are using non-GMO sugars for their Kiss products. And they have had to do an awful lot of searching for enough good sources of organic sugars to continue to make their product without using GMO sugars for them. I think that's incredible that Hershey Kiss, certainly not a good food in its own right, but they have said no to non-GMO, or they have said no to GMO, rather. Let me remind you right now that you are listening to What So What, and we have been talking about GMO foods. So, where do we go from here? Well, here's where Vandana Shiva went. She recently wrote an open letter to Prime Minister Modi and President Obama from Democratic Concerned Citizens of India and the U.S. And as you heard me earlier, I alluded to the 150,000 farmers in India who committed suicide when Monsanto took over their seeds. Now, taking over the seeds is a big deal. According to Andrew Kimbrell, he thinks that, in fact, GMO has a short lifespan, that the wave of anger about it is going to have its effect on the crops, that there are a lot of slow food movements around the world that he thinks can win the day against GMO. Next week, I'm going to tell you what some other people think of that, to see whether he is supported in that or not. But what he's concerned about is the real intention of these companies who are GMO food producers. He believes their real goal is purchasing and owning and controlling all the seeds of the world. That's what they're trying to do. And in India, they managed to do it for some time by taking the seeds from the local farmers, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of them, and forcing them to use Monsanto's GMO seeds. Meanwhile, taking their seeds from them and going out of their way to find ways of purchasing the rights to those natural seeds. Monsanto is apparently, and I have not got direct evidence of this, but it is consistent in virtually everything I read, Monsanto and some of the other big companies like Nestle's are going to the seed libraries of the world. These are libraries that host, harvest, store natural organic seeds. And the big companies are buying them up. And it's now estimated that Monsanto owns about 50% of all the seed stock in the world. And that is their real goal. Not 50%, they want 100%. So the GMO is their mechanism by which they can get into the libraries and buy the rights to the seeds and hence own the world because they own the food. Interesting, yes? We need to know more about this, and I promise that I will be bringing this up again in other shows, and I'll have other people here to talk about it. I talked about it with Brad DeMille last week when he was on my show, and several weeks before that, and asked him what he does about particularly buying GMO or buying organic corn. And he said, it's getting harder and harder to do. So we are probably at a critical point in our history regarding the ownership of food. Vandana Shiva wants the farmers to have the seeds and the people to have the seeds. She does not want companies to have them. Well, we're just about coming up to a close now, and so I will withhold some of the other things I've got here. There are two substantials to read to you, but I will read you next week just a few minutes of the letter from Vandana Shiva to President Obama. And I think you'll find that interesting as well. And if you want to read it on your own, simply Google this phrase, seed freedom and food democracy. Until next week, this is Jerry Paquette from What So What?